Welcome to the Zen Center. The center of practicing upright presence. Everywhere we go can thus be a Zen center. The very heart of practicing upright presence. Upright presence, dropping away the illusory dream of past and future as something separate from this. Upright presence, opening to the non-separation of all beings. Upright presence, devotion to the mystery which can't be gotten a hold of, only enjoyed. How can we devote ourselves to this mystery in such a complex and busy world that we live in? We might even say that the world itself is a distraction to the mystery. The mystery is not a world, and the world comes forward as an expression of the mystery, but it also it distracts us from its very nature. Its very nature is the mystery, and yet that's its function, is to distract us from its own nature. So how can we find devotion to the mystery when we can't even get a hold of it? When everything in our life seems to be like pulling us away from the mystery into some known graspable form that we can do something with. So we've been looking at this practice of devotion these days and weeks and months. So I felt inspired to bring forward this teaching of the four thoughts or the four contemplations that sometimes we say turn the mind towards practice, but we could also say the four thoughts that arouse devotion to the mystery. Like we could say it like that too. In the midst of a complex world, contemplations, thoughts, reflections that arouse our natural devotion to practice for the benefit of all beings, to presence and openness. So, some tools, and I have brought these up before in this hall, maybe in past years, but the thought arose, this should be brought up at least once a year. I just find personally so helpful for me. And I'll preface this by saying these four thoughts, these four contemplations, I have a kind of a practice, vow maybe even, to bring these forward every day. For many, many years now, I try to at least for a minute every day to try to think of these, and, you know, with some sincerity, even if it's a minute. So these four are contemplating, remembering, reflecting on the rare opportunity of human life, contemplating the impermanence of this life, contemplating how every action that we do throughout this rare and impermanent life makes some difference. Everything we do, it has an effect. And lastly, contemplating the basic dissatisfactoriness of habitual grasping of the world. These three are these four aspects. They're like four aspects of one reflection, in a way, all related. And when I consider them one by one as a group, I find it actually usually shifts my heart of devotion. Well, sometimes just tiny, tiny bit. Especially from the kind of lost touch with my heart of devotion to presence and the mystery. It's almost like an infallible tool. For me, it works. So, again, the first is the contemplation, the reflection, the consideration of the rare opportunity of human life. And to elaborate a little bit, we might not have been born either as a human or at all, right? Already, that's kind of a weird thought, right? Because we're thinking of ourselves. I might not have been born. In a way, it's ridiculous, right? Because we were born. It's not really that I might not have been born, but the fact that I am here reflecting on this means I was born as a human. And that itself is already kind of like starting to tap into the mystery. The very fact that if we start considering what is this human life, this rare, precious opportunity, already we can't really figure it out, can't really tell what it is. But and it's, of course, it's so obvious, and there's times throughout our life where it hits us strongly, right? We all have times, but they're usually not that often where it really hits us. Wow, being born as a human here and now is like beyond amazing, amazing beyond amazing. It usually doesn't happen every day, right? So that's why this, to actually like bring it up consciously every day, still might not hit us so strongly, but a little bit. It's not a kind of natural, intuitive thing, I think, for most people to think of. If I didn't consciously bring it up, I might go through many, many days without ever considering how rare and precious is this human life, and what an opportunity it is. It's rare in the sense that, well, if we just kind of compare it to, say, the insect world on this planet, many, many more insects than humans. We could have been born an insect. From a certain perspective, we could think that. In a way, we couldn't have, because here we are. But many other insect beings might be reflecting, wow, I was born an insect. It couldn't have been any other way. And there's some opportunity there and appreciation there, maybe, for these insects, but Maybe they can't consciously bring that forth as a practice the way we can. It's rare. The Buddha, in the foundational teachings, used this strange metaphor of imagining like all the oceans of the world as one giant body of water, and in this vast ocean of water there's floating a piece of driftwood with a hole in it, and in this whole vast ocean of the world there's this one sea turtle down in the bottom of the ocean somewhere in there. Could be a million miles, 1,000 miles from this floating piece of wood. And the Buddha said, what are the chances of this turtle rising to the surface to check out the sky and happening to poke its head through the hole in this piece of driftwood? Weird metaphor. The chances of that happening, the Buddha said, are more probable than being born as a human being in this world. Very, very rare. Not only born as humans, but like we're kind of doing relatively okay. Like we're getting older and we're slowly falling apart. But we all have probably at least one ear, maybe with hearing aids, but some ears to hear each other and hear Dharma, for example. And some eyes to see. Some of us might be completely deaf or completely blind. Still, we have a human life. But nobody in the room, I think, is completely blind or deaf. So that's even like more amazing. We might lose those things soon, but for now, we have them. How wonderful! How much more opportunity is there when a human can both see and hear and move around and so on? So very a great gift. Not only that our senses and body are basically good enough to get us here and hear each other and so on, but we happen to be born in a land where we weren't immediately like cast into slavery or total destitution. I don't know where we're all born in different places, but and some of us might have been born in much more difficult situations than others of us, but not so bad that like we weren't born in a war zone, or if we were, we were born in a war zone where we survived, and now somehow we ended up in Santa Cruz. That could be added as a fifth reflection for gratitude. A human life with our basic faculties pretty much intact, and not only that, but we're in Santa Cruz, California. Wow. I mean, there are wars going on right now. There's people being killed as we speak, right? People are being born immediately into like very, very challenging situations. And we're so blessed to be here. So this is part of the opportunity, again. Living in Santa Cruz is a great opportunity that many people don't have. We've probably had some basic education and things like this too. And we have spiritual community, right? And we have spiritual teachings that can help us in our life. So if you pile all that together, now it's getting really rare. This is like way more rare than that turtle poking its head through the hole in the wood, right? Now we're talking about like maybe the whole galaxy. There's a piece of wood floating in space, and there's a space turtle that has some chance to poke its head through there throughout the galaxy. To end up in Santa Cruz as a human in a practice place where practices and teachings are being offered. I mean, And how often do we stop and consider it? You know, it's so easy to take it for granted. And even actually complain about it. Get up in the morning, I gotta go to the Zendo because I'm ringing the bell. It's tired, I don't really want to go. Like, do we realize what an amazing opportunity? So that's why it's nice to kind of reflect on these things. Wow. Yes, Richard.
It's interesting, you know, when you reflect on that kind of fortunate circumstance, you know, along with that comes some pretty serious reflection about what kind of responsibility comes.
Yeah.
So it's almost daunting. It's wonderfully pleasing, but also terribly daunting to think, I have this good fortune, what do I
Yeah. We could say that those with a more and more fortunate fortune and opportunity have the most responsibility, some might say, to help out, because we have the opportunity to help out. We're not like in total survival mode like many people are. So that's a great point, yeah. And in a way, these four reflections, these four considerations are to turn our mind towards practice, to arouse the heart of devotion, to practice the Buddha way for the benefit of all beings. And we could say part of that is for the benefit of all beings to use our opportunity to help others. So I think in a way that's the very point of such a consideration. That would be an aspect there, is thus we can help more. So that's a very joyful consideration to start with. Very, if we really let it sink in, even if you're like really kind of feeling really depressed or down and out, to sincerely take up such a reflection, I think lifts that even just a little bit. Wow, I have so much to complain about here, but when I look at it like that, maybe that's a little, it's a little silly to complain. So then the next reflection is impermanence of this very life, of this very wonderful, rare opportunity. Wouldn't it be great if it lasted forever? In Santa Cruz in the summer. Nope. It's like almost like the flip side. It's like this great precious opportunity, but it's in a way it's precious because it's quickly passing, and for all of us here, our lives are probably half over at least, and so to consider that we will die. There's no other way around it. People might come up with some great inventions and medicines in the next 50 years while we're alive. Who knows? But I bet they're not going to come up with that, with the eternal life elixir. It would be a disaster. It would indeed. In fact, I recently saw some graph of the population of the world and how it was kind of going up like this over the last centuries, and in the last, I don't know, 150 or 50 years, it's suddenly like life expectancy is related to this vast overpopulation. I think many factors, it's very complicated, right? But like in a way, it's modern medicine is already, we might say, causing a major problem just because we live longer. But it is unquestionable that we will die, and we do not know when. We can expect average lifespan or something, but accidents happen all the time. It's totally unreliable. We might not make it out of the Zendo tonight, any of us. Chances are likely that we will, right? So therefore, we don't think about this so much. But if we think of that we definitely are going to die at some point, and we definitely will not know what, do not know when, and will never know when, till the very moment that it happens, right? It kind of balances out this first reflection, and in a way makes this precious, rare gift and opportunity and mystery of human life even that much more rare and precious when we know that it's only right now is all we have for sure. So, and again, this point of this is, in this case, these reflections are opening the heart of devotion to the way to practicing upright presence and appreciation of this for the benefit of all beings and openness to all beings. If we're going to die tomorrow, it would be kind of silly to reinforce our sense of separation, wouldn't it? So Dogen, our great ancestor Dogen, says a lot about impermanence. He says, actually he's talking about aspiration to practice the way here. We might even say it's related to devotion, to arouse this devotion or aspiration for upright presence. He says, reflect deeply in your heart of the impermanence of the world and yourself. It's not a matter of meditating using some provisional method of contemplation. It's not a matter of fabricating in our heads that which does not really exist. Impermanence is truly the reality right in front of our eyes. We don't need any teaching from others or some proof from scripture or some special teaching about this. It's kind of like the most obvious thing. He says, born in the morning, dead in the evening. A person we saw yesterday is no longer here today. We see and hear this with our own ears and eyes. Applying this to our own bodies and thinking of the reality of everyone and everything, though we expect to live for 70 or 80 years, we die when we must die. So therefore, let's not hold on to the illusory dreams that we do hold on to in this life. Dogen says, an ancient sage once said, if I learned the way in the morning, I wouldn't mind dying in the evening. Students of the Buddha way should have the same attitude. During eons of life and death, how many times have we been born and died in vain? If we don't practice wholeheartedly now, when by this rare chance we've been born in a human body and are able to encounter Buddha Dharma and practice, when else will we be able to open to the way? Like, this is our chance. Whether or not we have the view of rebirth coming back again and again, where chances to be born in a human realm, especially in Santa Cruz, are so rare. Maybe even a place where there's teachings of liberation available. So rare. I mean, here's our chance, right? Here's our chance. And if we don't have this view of rebirth, then in a way, then it's even worse, right? Then there's like, it's just this now is the only chance for this mind stream to open to the way. Well, gone. So, and then the third contemplation is reflecting on contemplating basically the karma, the law of cause and effect that plays out in this appearing world, where everything we do, you're going like that, to move fingers in a certain way has an effect. Every action of body, speech, and mind has some effect, big or small. That's almost frightening to consider, right? Almost makes you not want to move at all, because these effects are going to ripple out endlessly and cause either benefit or harm. So, and again, it's part of the opportunity. It all goes together. This rare opportunity, this human life where we have intentions that we can steer this way or that. It's quickly passing, and everything we do in this quickly passing opportunity makes a difference in this world, and then we're gone. Wow. Of course, this is all obvious. These are not like difficult to understand teachings, but we often don't think about it. So recently, the other day, somehow the thought arose for me, like the whatever savings I have is in this credit union account, and somehow I thought of this thing of like investing. I had never thought of that before. Like, you don't make any interest in the credit union, right? Like, well, maybe whatever I have in there, I could invest it in something, and that would be like, not only make a little bit for me, but it could do some good in the world. So I thought, I wouldn't want to just randomly invest in something that made the most income. It would be like, what would be the most kind of like supportive investment? So like, there's socially responsible investing, right? And now there's this whole movement of environmental investing. So these days, I really thought, environmental investment, this would be great. Even if it was just a few dollars, why not? This would be a good, tiny activity that could be of some benefit without, you know, having to do much of anything, I thought. So, I start Googling around, and there's all these environmental investment firms and recommendations and all this language that I have no idea what it means. I've never entered this realm beyond the credit union. So I spent like maybe a couple of hours looking through and like, huh, and trying to look up all these definitions. And it's like another world for me. And just trying to do like this little bit of action to have a little bit of effect. And usually I've had the intentions before to not turn on the computer till afternoon, because you just can get lost in there. I think you all know, right? And I have enough opportunity that I often don't have to, so just don't do it. But sometimes, check you out, or I'm checking out some, I'm reading a book on there or something. Well, the idea arose. Let's just check it out briefly. There the morning's gone, right? It maybe was beneficial, but at some point I caught it and just like, wow, this, it's related to the impermanence part, right? This is my precious life. I thought it would be like a practice morning, and, you might say, well, that was a practice morning because you had a good intention. It did not open me to the mystery. It really did not, you know. We have to weigh these things. Sometimes you go through an action, you put in a couple more hours maybe, and then you can actually do it, and then it's done, right? And I've heard these things, you know, then you weigh too the things. You can pay somebody to spend their time tracking that kind of thing, which I would kind of lean in that direction, actually, because I don't want to spend my time tracking those things. How's the investment doing? Ah, oh, I mean, I know people who spend all their time tracking these things. And so I noticed it was like this combination of something about like the preciousness of human life, and let's take care of this life and this planet. And then the particular thing of let's do a little thing to make a little difference in this simple way today. And then immediately seeing this impermanence part of like, I just spent a morning of my life. And then I actually do this thing I confess to called sleeping. I spend like a huge percentage of my life sleeping. You might too. I like maybe 6 hours a night, right? It's not that much, but 6 out of 24 hours, that's like a quarter. That's a quarter? That's a quarter of every day, right? So, you know, we might expect, so we have 50 more, maybe we say we have 50 more years, shave off a quarter right there. 17 years of sleep. Straight through. Then kind of cooking and eating, which could be a beautiful practice and part of enjoying this life. Sleep's usually not, we're not so conscious to enjoy it, right? But cooking is something we have to eat. And we maybe spend a couple hours a day, shave off a couple there. And on and on, right? If you have investments, shave off a couple there. Have to take care of this and that. Things that are like, again, I think of this world. Maybe it's a little harsh to say the world is a distraction from the mystery. It's a kind of a strict view, but there are many beautiful things in the world, but even they are, in a way, the world as we think of the world that we experience is a kind of like, it's not really what's happening. The Buddhas and ancestors tell us again and again and again. We forget again and again because we're so involved in it. It's not what we think it is. And there's this beautiful, rare gift of the actual upright presence of this life that's woven into the so-called world. And the world is, as I mentioned, made of this presence. An expression of this presence, and yet, ironically, even though that's its nature, it also obscures the presence, strangely enough, and we usually relate to the obscuring quality of the world. I do, anyway. So, everything makes a difference, but how we're going to spend our time, that's the impermanence thing. And then the final, fourth contemplation is, how unsatisfying it is to just go through this kind of habitual rounds of habitual grasping. Sometimes you might go through a day, like I wasn't like majorly grasping through the day, but in a way, I mean, I call this like spending a couple hours trying to research what an investment even is. And is this company like for real or what? In a way, there was a grasping behind that, I felt. Maybe a good one, maybe some grasping is, we need to grasp a little to benefit beings. But just this reflection is just noticing how we go through the day from waking up in the morning to going to sleep at night and these patterns, habitual patterns of moving through a so-called world in a kind of habitual way. And like, where we're not, I feel not so open to everyone and to reality when moving through the world in a habitual way. Even Zen practice can be that way. Yeah, time for morning zazen, time for noon zazen, time for evening zazen, go, now, what's next? It's like, we can just go along and hopefully there's, you know, reality seeping in too. But these are, you know, I bring these reflections up as kind of like a little wake-up calls as they work for me in arousing this devotion to the way. And in the same spirit of this, just a little different teaching, but I just came across these notes recently from Adyashanti. You know, Adyashanti is a Zen person who's kind of eclectic and not so traditional Zen lineage teacher, but I respect him greatly. I think his teaching is quite wonderful. It's been moving to me. And this is like, it's kind of like a little intro to practice, a little book that he has, The Way of Liberation. It's a little like, almost like a pamphlet. Have you seen that? So, And he, I think it's like a free giveaway or download or something. He talks about these five foundations. So it's a different teaching than these four reflections, but I think in the same spirit of foundations for practice, devotion to practice. And these five that he mentions are clarify your aspiration for practice. What are you actually doing? You know, we can just, we again, be going through the motions of, especially if we've been practicing a while, I think it's even harder. Well, beginner's mind, when we first come to practice, it's easier, actually, I think. I really want to, this is something great, a new discovery, and this is what it's about, and I want to learn everything about it, and here's my aspiration. As we go along over the years, it can become more habitual, right? So, clarify your aspiration, he says, not as a future goal, but in each moment. It's a little bit like every moment, the activity of body, speech, and mind we're doing is having an effect. So we could also say every moment there's a aspiration, not for the future, but what do I aspire, how do I aspire to live right now? So clarify this aspiration. And the next one is unconditional follow through. That's great, I think. So we have an aspiration. I want to practice wholehearted upright presence for the benefit of all beings. Sounds good, but this one's a little bit harder. Unconditional follow through. What are you willing to do or to let go of doing right now to accord with this aspiration? That's a tough one, I think. Unconditional follow through to be in accord with the aspiration. The third one is never abdicate your authority. Take full responsibility for your life. And he mentions in the commentary, I think, don't give your authority over to like Zen teachers, for example, or spiritual teachings or anything. You can use all that. Of course, we recommend these relationships with teachers and practices and the tradition and the scriptures and so on, but don't abdicate your authority. Don't say, I'll just do what they say. So it's taking full responsibility. Nobody knows what's right for you except you. It's a beautiful teaching. And Zen, actually, the Zen ancestors speak that way a lot too. And the fourth is practice absolute sincerity, which means to him, honesty, genuineness, and integrity. A little bit like, I think, unconditional follow through. Sounds almost the same to me. Practice absolute sincerity, mean like, I really mean this. And it might mean that absolute sincerity is, wow, I'm really not following through with my intention. I think absolute sincerity doesn't mean we never fall off our aspiration. Like the unconditional follow through, nope, I didn't do it all day today. And I think the absolute sincerity would be like to actually admit that, wow, I'm really off track. Okay. And I want to be, I'm remembering now I'm on track. Honesty, genuineness, and integrity. Honesty with ourselves and others. And fifth, be a good steward of your life. Completely face our life, take care of it as a precious and rare opportunity. He says, do not use spirituality to avoid any aspect of your life. Is part of being a good steward for your life. So clarify your aspiration, unconditional follow through, never abdicate your authority, practice absolute sincerity, and be a good steward of your life. And we can combine these modern foundations. He doesn't even get into what the practice is yet. He does later in this little pamphlet. But this is the foundation to, I would say, arouse the devotion to practice. Now we want to know what to do. But that's another Dharma talk, right? Many other Dharma talks. So this this year of studying devotion, in a way we could say it is the practice, but we could also look at it as how do we fuel our devotion to wholeheartedly follow through on our deepest aspirations. Reflecting on, you can say it in one, I say it in one sentence. I do it often at the beginning of Zazen, because then I won't forget. Right? Beginning, at least, you know, maybe one Zazen period a day. Say, contemplating the rare opportunity of human life, which is quickly passing, where every action makes a difference, and where habitual grasping is totally painful and dissatisfying. Contemplating that in that way, now I take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, vowing to practice this way for the benefit of all beings. So, it's easy to make that into a habitual, pattern, just say the word, so taking them to heart, these reflections. Any questions, thoughts, comments? Yes.
I think this business of sleeping and feeding yourself, this has to be done without thinking about anything else while you're doing it. I don't always do that, but sometimes I wash the dishes mindfully.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a waste of time to sleep because you have to nourish and
it's a good point. Yeah.
To an organism that has a vow to sleep.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, of course, don't mean to criticize sleep and say, well, we shouldn't sleep, right? Of course, we need to. It's just a reminder that that's a huge part of our life.
Yeah.
It's not so much that it's a bad thing, or because we do need to, but
that's going to be an unconscious part of.
Yeah, it's part of the deal, but it's in reflecting on impermanence, it just helps us to wake up even more to wow, that's in 50 years, that's maybe 12 or 13 years of sleep. Necessary 12 years of sleep. But 12 years where we're not, I mean, we can learn things like dream yoga where we can practice, upright presence in our sleep. There are such practices, but they take a lot of time too, right? And as you say, eating too, the Zen tradition beautifully takes these activities that we have to do and turns them into practices, right? So our ancestor Dogen talks about cooking as a practice and eating orioki as a ritualized practice, and even sleeping, there's a ritual when going to sleep and when waking up at least, and even posture for sleeping Dogen offers. So we can make these things into practices. And they take time. And I mention them because they're inevitable. They're we might say, well, I'm going to use my entire life in this way. Well, immediately we can take out these pieces that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And do we have to move funds into an investment in the environment? It's an open question for me now. I kind of gave up after that. This is not what I want to be doing with my time, even though it might have been a good thing. And I thought maybe I'll come back to it later, some other time. Or maybe there's someone in the Sangha who knows about these things that can help me more than the internet. If anyone has environmental investments and knows about that, let me know. And we can help each other. But it's a question. How we weigh what's most important. How we spend our time. But thanks for that point. Yeah, I don't mean to say that anything we do is inherently negative or positive. It's more just but I would say that everything we do inherently takes time. in the world of work, doing an activity, let's say, ultimately, there is no time and there is no activity. But in the world of activity, that's the world of time. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I think the past, we might add in the reflection to, well, the past is gone and we learn from it. Every moment of the past we learn from, and it makes us what we are today. All of the past. If you took out one tiny thread of the past, we would be a different person. So in a way there's the pain of feeling like we have wasted time in the past, but that in a way is a positive thing for today, because it's like, well, now since I feel that pain, here's how I want to use my time today and in the future. I know it. That's this point, you know, and, you know, sleep and food are just this tiny bit of it, but yeah, I think it's different. Times are different than they were, in Dogen's age of medieval Japan. It's so complicated just to, like, the amount of kind of like information we have to process and deal with, almost like the bureaucracy of living in the modern world. I imagine, anyways, takes a lot more time than in the past. And how do we want to do that? It's very challenging. But then the aspiration of, like, remembering these four reflections as a whole, it maybe starts steering us slightly in new directions. So it's about time to stop. But kind of related to this. Is a quote from the same pamphlet of Adyashanti, where he says, if we do not live and manifest in our lives what we realize in our deepest moments of revelation, then we're living a split life. So that's one powerful quote, I think. And that's maybe, I felt like when I was getting all involved and trying to figure out this investment thing, I felt like it was a split life. And he says, in the end, we all get what we value most. And if we don't like what we've gotten, we'd better take an honest look at what we're valuing. I love that one. So, yeah, well, it's... speaks for itself, I think, right?
This is a downer.
What's that?
This is a real downer to end with.
Well, just remember, the first one, I like starting with this first reflection, is the greatest joy to just remember what an amazing, rare, mysterious gift is this human life. With all these complications, and all these, the other reflections all start to get more gnarly. But if it starts to get too gnarly, just come back to this one. In a way, I think this is the central one. If I had to choose any of these four reflections or five foundations of Adyashanti, I would say, let me just really try to focus on appreciating the rare opportunity of this mystery we call human life. And let the rest take care of itself.
The center of wonder.
Into the center of wonder. The centerless center of wonder. The Zen center. Thanks for coming to the Zen center this evening. And we offer any mind turnings, any shifts towards practice that these mind shifters might shift. We offer the shifts to all beings throughout space and time. May they all open to the vast mystery. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.